I'm Louis DiBiase, and this is Locked On Eagles. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into this Wednesday edition of the show. It's Crossover Wednesday. Don't worry, we will get into our conversation with the host of Locked On Vikings, Lucas Braun, as we continue to preview. Well, we started off, really, our Eagles versus Vikings coverage today right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day, the Eagles returning to Minnesota for the first time since they won the Super Bowl 2 years ago. But if you ask the players right now, they're not taking the bait about that. They're not really taking trips down memory lane. This is a business trip. This is a team that has a daunting six-game trip coming up here with a three-game road trip, starting that off against Minnesota, against Dallas, and against Buffalo. So they're determined. They are keeping their eyes on the prize as they try to go for three straight wins after a two-game losing streak. The Eagles have really right the ship, put it back on track here, put the train back on its tracks. Despite some inconsistencies on both sides of the ball, the Eagles are still playing some good football right now, so we'll get into the preview of Eagles-Vikings with Lucas Braun coming up next right here on Crossover Wednesday. But first, we got to get into an injury update. Doug Peterson met with the media early Wednesday morning. Cornerback Sidney Jones is a full go, so expect Sidney Jones to start on the outside opposite Rasul Douglas. But an interesting takeaway from Peterson's comments was, I don't want to say he called Sidney Jones out, but he kind of called him out. He really was insinuating that Sidney Jones needs to be able to play through a certain level of soreness, a certain level of pain, like others have over the past couple years, right? Alshon Jeffrey, still don't think he is totally healed from that calf injury. Fletcher Cox been dealing with a foot problem all year. Brandon Graham last year was dealing with an ankle injury for the first, 8-9 weeks of the season. You heard all the stories after the Super Bowl that Alshon was playing with a torn rotator cuff. There were all these injuries going on. And with Sidney Jones, yes, the hamstring injuries, the soft tissue problems continue to happen. But keeping him out of the lineup is something that Peterson was almost kind of hinting it wasn't necessary. That Sidney Jones, there should be times where, yes, this might flare up again, where he might just be an injury-prone player that can never fully nurse these injuries back to health, but he should still be able to be out on the field and not be a total liability. That, to me, was the takeaway from what I got out of what Doug Peterson said today, and I definitely get where he's coming from. It is frustrating that Sidney Jones, it seems like, is suffering minor hamstring injuries. We don't know the severity of it because they're so shady with medical information, but at the same time, you think, man, there's other guys that might be playing with a lot worse, and the Eagles could really use Sidney Jones right now, considering four of the other five corners outside of Rasul Douglas are injured. So Doug Peterson kind of called him out today. I get where he's coming from. I get the frustrations. The Eagles have invested a lot of time, a lot of draft capital, and a lot of patience into Sidney Jones, and hopefully he can stay healthy the rest of the season because he's shown some good things so far through the first 5 weeks of the season, and he will start against a really good Minnesota Vikings receiving core in Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen this Sunday. Some bad news, though, on the injury report. So good news that Sidney Jones is playing. The bad news, DeSean Jackson not likely to play versus the Vikings. Once again, the Eagles don't give out a lot of information on injuries, but an ESPN report says he is likely to return more so between the weeks of 7 and 9. So next week, maybe against Dallas, maybe against Buffalo week 8, or coming back home at Lincoln Financial Field against the Chicago Bears week 9. So we're not going to get DeSean Jackson back this week against Minnesota. If he can't make it back soon, we talked about it on the show yesterday. We really got deep into the storyline of the Eagles not being able to stretch the field vertically without Jackson throughout the last 3 weeks. If he can't make it back, and I still believe in the personnel they have in Alshon Jeffrey and Nelson Aguilar, I think they've had opportunities to make plays down the field the past 3 weeks, and they just haven't capitalized because of drops, because of defensive holding calls and whatnot. And also because I'm confident DeSean Jackson will come back, I don't think they need to make a severe move right now. But if this is something where it's week 9 and he's still, like, he might play, but they're just not confident, and the offensive struggles continue with Aguilar's inconsistencies, with Arthego Whiteside being a no-show, and with Alshon Jeffrey and Wentz maybe not being on the same page down the field, then they might have to look into making a move. I thought about the options today because I didn't mention it on the podcast yesterday. And there aren't really a lot of options, though. This is the thing. If they want to specifically go for a vertical threat, You're not going to find someone like DeSean Jackson out there. You can find maybe someone like Emmanuel Sanders from the Broncos that you could trade for, and he can make plays down the field, but that's not really his forte. AJ Green from the Bengals, I think, would be more of an option for down the road because he's banged up right now too. And, you know, he's just a great overall receiver. He could play inside or he could play outside with DeSean Jackson inside or Alshon Jeffery inside. So I'd love to give, I mean, I would give the Bengals a second round pick for AJ Green, but that's not really solving your immediate need for a down the field threat. People keep mentioning Robbie Anderson from the Jets as an option. I don't see it. They weren't going to bite last year at the trade deadline. Before the Eagles traded for Golden Tate, they wanted Robbie Anderson. The Jets didn't want to bite. They didn't want to get rid of Sam Darnold's number one receiver. Even though they're losing this year, why would they want to do that now? Why would they want to get rid of Sam Darnold's really only dangerous threat at wide receiver? That doesn't make much sense. It would make sense from an Eagles perspective, but from a Jets perspective, I just don't really get that at all. People were asking me today what Mike Wallace is doing. He has yet to have a workout in the NFL so far this year. The Eagles do not have interest per Adam Kaplan. So Mike Wallace, don't know if he's an option. What, are you going to take Torrey Smith out of retirement? There really aren't many ways to solve this problem without Jackson returning to the field or without them getting a much-needed boost from Aguilar or from Alshon or from Arcega Whiteside. I think that is your best bet, is to get Jackson at least on the field at, what, 70-75% for the remainder of the season. Have Aguilar fix his dropping and fumbling issues, because even Aguilar had two really good chances to make plays down the field against the Jets last week. So, and I think Alshon Jeffery will eventually make plays down the stretch this year like he did last year. So I think this core that they have right now has proven they can make plays on the field. They did it last year. They fixed their problems, their compact offense, without really adding anybody, right? It was just they got healthy, right? Alshon Jeffery got healthy. Carson Wentz's back problem, it was fixed by putting Nick Foles in at quarterback. And then the plays came down the field against the Rams, against the Texans, against the Redskins, and so on into the playoffs. So I think that's your best bet right now, because there just aren't a lot of great options. But we'll see. We'll continue to monitor DeSean Jackson's status, but it seems like he is not going to play this week against the Minnesota Vikings. So the Eagles will have to continue to rely on what they've got up front, the offensive line, the run game, and have Carson Wentz. This is why you have Carson Wentz, to will plays to happen and make plays for your team instead of your team making plays for you. So we'll continue to keep a close eye on number 10, but for now, probably out on Sunday. All right, coming up next, we got our crossover edition of the podcast with Locked On Vikings host Lucas Braun. We take a deep dive into two teams that I think the fans don't like each other more so than the teams themselves, but definitely rivals nonetheless the past 2 years, and they're both at 3-2 right now, both very talented teams. This is going to be a close battle, and we'll preview it. We'll take a look at the matchups on both sides of the ball coming up next right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Today's podcast is sponsored by Blue Chew. Guys, this isn't just for all of you out there who can't perform. It's for anyone who wants that extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Listen up. It's Blue Chew. Blue like the color blue. It's prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. So there's no in-person doctor visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, none of that awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our Locked On Eagles listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment for free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's B-L-U-E, BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to try it for free. BlueChew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the Locked On Eagles podcast today.
All right, everybody, welcome back. This is Crossover Wednesday. Louis DiBiase here, host of Locked On Eagles, along with Lucas Braun, the host of Locked On Vikings. Lucas,
2-3-2 teams that I don't know if you would agree, but I feel like aren't really playing quite yet up to the stride that people are expecting throughout the season.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about like what has been going on with the Eagles. I just know that they've lost a couple of games that they probably shouldn't. I think the Vikings are playing about exactly how people expected them to. They expected them to be about an average team. They've shellacked three bad teams. They've lost to two good teams on the road, or at least two like above average teams, I'd call them the Bears and Packers. But like the Eagles have kind of been more up and down, certainly than like I expected. So if you had to like chalk it up to like one or two reasons, just on the whole, before we get into the specifics of offense and defense and stuff, like what's the culprit here?
I think a lot of it has to do with injuries on both sides of the ball. You look at, they're severely missing DeSean Jackson, especially down the field. I still think, you know, their offensive line and run game has really been able to move the ball, especially the past couple weeks, specifically that big win on Thursday night in Lambeau against the Green Bay Packers. Carson Wentz, you're welcome. Carson Wentz still playing at a very high level, especially on third downs. He really looks like he's back to his 2017 form, especially from a mobility perspective. They've been great in the red zone, but stretching the field without DeSean Jackson has been a concern. And on the defensive side too, man, they just continue to suffer injuries in the secondary. The cornerback position, they had one starting corner last week of six they were rolling into from the summer into the season. They had one guy healthy in Rasul Douglas, and they were having guys playing coming off the streets, Orlando Scandrick, Craig James. So I would say injuries once again is plaguing this team. I think a lot of mental mistakes too because of the injuries. You got newer guys making kind of boneheaded drops and penalties on both sides of the ball. So I think that's really where the Eagles are at this point. There's some inconsistencies, but it's been very encouraging to see them get to 3-2 here regardless of that, and they've been pretty good in crucial areas. So I'm still very optimistic of where this team's headed, but they got to get it fixed. They got to clean up the mistakes now because, you know, starting with you guys this week, they have a very tough six-game stretch with this three-game road trip really featuring that tough road.
Yeah, so, like, there's a whole bunch of interesting – let's just go right into, like, this being the side of the ball that we start with the yeah. Vikings on offense and the Eagles on defense. Because I was looking into that secondary, and some of those guys have, like, played in relief really well. At least Rasul Douglas has actually had a really nice year. And it seems like Orlando Scandrick has been a lot better as a slot than you maybe would expect. But then you have, like, Avante Maddox and I think Ronald Darby, who are getting, like, toasted all over the place. So, like, who can we expect in the secondary here to go up against, like, Diggs and Thielen? And I guess Scandrick might end up being off the field a lot because the Vikings run, similarly to the Eagles, a lot of 12 personnel. So that is going to kind of, like, invite in, like, Nate Gary, and the base package for the Eagles. Right. So I guess, like, in terms of coverage and that, like, back end, like, where, like, what can we expect to see against the Vikings?
Well, Rasul Douglas, you're right. You've mentioned him. He is playing some really good football right now. He is graded out in the top 15 from Pro Football Focus's grading system at corner. The passer ratings of quarterbacks when targeting Douglas has been below 60 since week two. So he is really coming into his own in year three. Outside of him, though, yeah, it's going to be Scandrick in the slot. He had two strip sacks last week, incredibly enough, coming off the blitz. They really like to utilize him in that area. He had a touchdown as well. And again, he was not with the team. He got cut in training camp, so he came off the streets and did that against, while it was the Jets, still an impressive performance. But yeah, Avante Maddox, Darby, Sidney Jones, too, all very inconsistent this year, and they've all been banged up the past couple weeks. However, Sidney Jones was a full go at practice the past couple days, so expect him to be on the outside opposite Rasul Douglas, and then I think it's going to be Orlando Scandrick in the slot here. Darby's still a couple weeks away with a hamstring injury. Avante Maddox still dealing with that neck injury. He was carted off the field against Green Bay 2 weeks ago, so it's going to be Douglas and Jones, but you're right, that's somewhere, you know, the Vikings, I'm sure, are going to run the football a lot still, but it's going to be tough. The Eagles are the number one rushing defense in the league. Where you can exploit them is down the field, and the Vikings did that last year. Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen combined for over 200 yards receiving last game against the Eagles. So it's going to be an interesting chess match between the strengths of the run game on both sides, but the passing game is where I'm really nervous. Is Ken Douglas, he's been great, but can he and Jones hold the fort? Can they contain Diggs and Thielen? They're going to get theirs, I'm sure, but can you just make sure the big plays down the field don't continuously happen like they did last year?
Yeah, the Vikings have been, like, weirdly pretty good at generating explosive passes this year, despite a whole bunch of futility elsewhere in their pass game and a lot of, you know, third and nine situations and like, all kinds of, like, stalling, especially against a team like the Bears. So where I guess I'm the most nervous as a Vikings fan is Fletcher Cox, of course, because Garrett Bradbury and Pat Elflein have both had really, really rough starts to the season. Elflein less so, but Bradbury as a first round draft pick has been, like, abysmal. Like, if you go look at what Grady Jarrett and Kenny Clark did to him weeks one and two, this is like a buy all Fletcher Cox shares kind of game.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, super nervous about Fletcher Cox. I think he'd be, like, the hands down best defensive tackle in the league, and nobody would argue about it if it weren't for Aaron Donald.
For sure.
So, like, that kind of disruption is going to be really difficult. So I guess like from a run perspective, because the Vikings obviously are going to want to run a ton of and you know, kind of take advantage of guys like Brandon Graham and Derek Barnett, who have been unbelievable pressure generators. Hopefully they'll pin their ears back and like get too far upfield and maybe you can, you know, catch them with some zone running. But like you can't run inside zone directly at Fletcher Cox. You'll have to trap him or do some kind of pin pull shenanigan. And then that leaves the ends like a little bit better against run defense. So I don't know if the Vikings like can get their run game going here. I would also expect Jim Schwartz, who watched, you know, who I'm sure has watched enough tape, to go just load the box and tell his piece. So the Vikings use a bunch of like jet motion to manipulate the box counter, you know, kind of lure somebody from one side of the box to the other or out of the box entirely. And the Bears just were like, okay, don't respond to the jet motion. And the whole offense like fell apart. And the Giants like didn't do a good enough job of that. So the Vikings were able to like get the run game going again. So if I'm Jim Schwartz, I'm looking at like, you know, load the box and tell your guys not to fall for the jet motion. And then we kind of have to see if Stefanski and Kubiak are going to pull out like new wrinkles with that jet motion to counter that strategy, or if things just kind of fall apart again like they did in Chicago. So it'll be really interesting to go up against that front, considering that the Vikings have had pretty good run blocking, some suspect pass blocking on the interior. The tackles, though, Riley Reiff has been average at worst, and Brian O'Neill has been playing like a top 10 tackle. And that like, which is insane to say, cause it's the Vikings offensive line, which is notoriously like terabad. But like that interior of the line, I think a lot is going to be decided right there in the middle where all the real like meat gets churned out.
Well, I mean, look, and Dalvin Cook too. I have been on the Dalvin Cook train really since he came out of Florida State. I liked him better than Leonard Fournette. I liked him better than Christian McCaffrey. He was my top rated running back coming out. And the Eagles, they wanted him. Doug Peterson talked about it in his press conference today. They were really close. If the Vikings don't move up two spots right in front of the Eagles in the second round, they traded with the Bengals, the Eagles would have took Dalvin Cook instead of Sidney Jones. So, I mean, it could be a totally different scenario right here. And instead, Dalvin Cook has become one of the best running backs in the league this year with the Minnesota Vikings. And it's not a shock to me. I mean, even his rookie year, he did this the first month of the year. He was third in rushing. So Dalvin Cook is awesome. He's going to make plays. The thing with the Eagles, though, again, is, and you talked about stacking the box, they haven't even had to stack the box this year, and they're still generating so much pressure, but getting past the offensive line in the passing game, but more so specifically in the running game. The pass rush has actually been kind of inconsistent over the first half of the year, but the run game has been great as it normally has since Fletcher Cox has been manning the middle of that defensive line. So it's going to be an interesting chess, just a battle between those. It doesn't really seem like it matters who is at running back. The Eagles have been able to stop the likes of Le'Veon Bell. I really like Aaron Jones. I think Kerryon Johnson, they're two really good young running backs. The Eagles have been great in that area, but if the quarterback's going to be able to throw for 300, 400 yards in a game sometimes, it doesn't really matter. If they continue to have, it's great to make a team one-dimensional, but if you can't stop the other dimension at all, it doesn't really matter if you can stop the run. So the big matchup for me here, Lucas, is Diggs and Thielen versus Douglas and Jones. They have to make sure they stop them. Let me ask you a question about Kirk Cousins in that passing game. What really has it been? I mean, how much of it is on Kirk Cousins? How much of it has been the offensive line and their protection, but also the scheme too? I mean, look, I'm not a really big believer in Kirk Cousins. I don't think he should have got the contract that Minnesota gave him, but he has put up numbers in the past for sure. Some crazy box score numbers with Washington and with Minnesota, and against the Eagles, he's had a lot of success. But this year especially, he seems like he's struggling, and really since they fired John DeFilippo, they're going heavy runs. So how would you dissect what has been happening with the passing game of Minnesota so far this year through 5 weeks?
Yeah, so there's been a bunch of sample size stuff because a lot of the Vikings games, they've gone out to these huge leads early. It was 21-0 in the first quarter against both the Falcons and the Raiders. So that's two of the five games that you kind of have to throw the whole game out, and then like total season stats kind of get a little skewed. So that's part of it. But I think if you ask this question to like five different Vikings fans, you get five different answers as to like who's at fault. Because there are Kirk Cousins defenders, there are, you know, Stefanski people who think Stefanski is the problem, people who think Zimmer's the problem. So where I stand personally, I think that most of it's on Kirk Cousins. The offensive line has given up more pressure than I'm comfortable with, although they pulled it together a little bit in the last couple of games. But I think Kirk Cousins has habits that exacerbates that pressure. I think other quarterbacks would be, like Carson Wentz, for example, I think would be able to function under this amount of pressure. And Kirk Cousins like makes it worse actively by,
you know,
working the pocket inappropriately or just holding on to the ball or declining deep throws. I'm sure you're aware of the whole Stephon Diggs drama that went down last week.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of that was because Diggs would be open downfield in a spot where the read should come to him, and Kirk Cousins would look right at him and not pull the trigger, not throw it. And, you know, Mike Zimmer called him out for that. He called himself out for that. So it's not like a disputed thing that that was the issue. In terms of the scheme, though, I do think that they're doing a good job of like giving Diggs and Thielen opportunities to get open. But like, you can lead a horse to water, you can't make him throw to Diggs or Thielen.
Mm-hmm. No, I get that. Let me ask you too, because there has been, I mean, they've been riding through Dalvin Cook this year. Let's say this Eagles number one rushing defense really gives him troubles. How long do you, and again, some of it is they have to run the football a lot because of how inconsistent Kirk Cousins has been this year and how he is missing throws down the field. Trust me, I'm a Diggs fantasy owner, so I've been keeping a close eye on the impact there. How long would you say they would continue to ride the run game? I mean, for Green Bay, they went away from it, and Matt LaFleur got heavily criticized in the red zone. He passed on four consistent plays, and the Eagles were able to make two goal line stands in the fourth quarter. Is Minnesota going to, like, if they can't run the football, are they going to just start airing it out? I mean, they haven't really done that this year where they've opened the floodgates. Do you think they will take that approach against the Eagles if they don't have success on the ground?
Yeah, so the Vikings actually had a game against Green Bay where they got behind by a ton early, similarly to how the Eagles-Packers game shook out. But they got behind 21-0 in the first quarter, and they stuck with the run game all the way up until, like, game situation pretty much dictated that, like, all right, crap, now the clock's a thing, we can't
right.
run. So I do think that they'll keep going to it probably beyond the point where it's smart. They stuck with it, even though the Bears were shutting it down. They ran into, you know, 7-on-8, 8-on-8 boxes, which is really unwise. So like, I think that they are dedicated to doing it even beyond the point where it is smart. So that means that the Eagles run defense, like if it does give the Vikings trouble, which I am absolutely not ruling out here, then like that could become kind of the definition of the game. And we could both be on our podcasts on Monday going, all right, what happened to the Vikings run game?
Right.
So I think that that's going to be like a really big key. This is why I think that Fletcher Cox can actually, like, this can be one of those Fletcher Cox took over the game kind of games.
Yeah.
If it goes poorly for the Vikings. But yeah, they are like super dedicated to it, but I hope that we see an example, cause that's been the like narrative about the Vikings is, all right, you stop the run, what happens? And we've seen the Bears stop the run. That was the only team that really truly stopped the run. And the Vikings totally fell apart and ended up with like locker room controversies. So that's kind of the operative question is, will Kirk Cousins be able to take advantage of an ailing secondary, right? Rasul Douglas is no, you know, Kyle Fuller. So I guess we'll have to see.
Today's Crossover Wednesday is sponsored by MyBookie. Do you ever find yourself wishing that you could make some extra cash with your NFL knowledge? Well, at MyBookie, they want to make your dream come true this season. Right now, all players are invited to play in the free $50,000 Survivor Contest. Winner takes all. Contest starts October 8th and closes October 14th before the start of Monday Night Football. Pick one team each week, survive the longest, and you can take home $50,000 in cash. Make a successful deposit with MyBookie, and you'll receive a free entry into the contest today. Between football season, the MLB playoffs, and the start of the NBA and NHL seasons, it's time to get off the sidelines and get in on the action. If you really want to support your team this season, don't just sit on the sidelines. Get in the game with MyBookie, and if you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Once again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to double your cash. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, and you get paid.
But it's probably time to move to the other side of the ball. And I want to kick that off with just a quick question. Is Carson Wentz like good again? He's good again, right?
I have been thrilled with Carson Wentz. And some people the past couple weeks, and I think it's the stat cherry pickers really here that are going after his completion percentage, which has been in the, you know, high 50s, low 60s the past couple games. For me, a lot of that, I like to more so look at adjusted completion percentage that takes into account drops. The Eagles lead the league in drops right now without DeSean Jackson. They, again, like I said earlier, they have struggled to stretch the field. But when they have been able to stretch the field, it's been because Carson Wentz just wills it. Honestly, the Eagles, they're 3-2 right now. They are two drops away from being 5-0. Carson Wentz had two game-winning
touchdown throws on the money against the Atlanta Falcons and against the Detroit Lions. In late in the fourth quarter on the final drive, dropped by Nelson Agholor, wide open, on the money. Could not have been a better throw in stride. Down the field to rookie J.J. Arcega-Whiteside against the Detroit Lions. Both were in their hands and they dropped the football. So for me, the offense, the passing game has been disappointing, but it has not been because of Wentz. He was Pro Football Focus's number one ranked quarterback heading into last week's game against the Jets. He looks mobile again, healthy. You cannot see any limitations with his leg or with his back. So for me, I see the aggressive Carson Wentz that is making the same jaw-dropping plays he did in 2017 where he nearly won the MVP. So I think it's only a matter of time before this offense really kicks it up a notch. So I think Carson Wentz has been great. I think the problems on offense have not been number 11.
So Xavier Rhodes, speaking of the passing game, is having kind of a down year, but we get Xavier Rhodes versus Alshon Jeffrey, which is one of my favorite like low-key rivalries in the NFC.
Yeah, they're awesome.
So they've gone against – so here's the last five times. I tweeted this out earlier. The last five times that Xavier Rhodes has gone against Alshon Jeffrey, the 2018, he went 2-for-5 for 39. Then it was the 2017 NFC Championship, 3-for-3 for 27. Then 1-of-2 for 10 yards and a pick. That was the 2016, that really weird game. Mm-hmm. And then in 2016 again, or I'm sorry, that was 2016 against the Bears. 2016 against the Bears the second time, 3-for-7 for 52, and then a 2015 game where it was 0-for-2. So it's been a kind of back and forth. I think a couple of those games, you could say Alshon Jeffrey like got his, and a couple of those he was totally shut down. But I kind of feel like this is a week where Alshon Jeffrey can get a bit of revenge on Xavier Rhodes. The Vikings typically will shadow. They've been doing it less this year, but they've typically had Rhodes shadow Jeffrey. So has he been living up to who we kind of think he is? Because Xavier Rhodes has had a whole bunch of technique problems so far this year.
Well, Alshon Jeffrey had a calf strain in between weeks 2 and 3 that kept him out of the Falcons game and the Lions game. So the past couple weeks, he's not really been at 100%. Still caught a touchdown, destroyed Jair Alexander, who's one of the best corners in the game, on this incredible swim move in the red zone to put the Eagles back into that football game on Thursday night. This week, he had 6 catches for over 50 yards, but you still don't see him making the signature Alshon Jeffrey contested catches down the field quite yet. He hasn't been on the same page with Carson Wentz in that area, really since the beginning of last year, and some of it had to do with Wentz's injury last year. Some of it has to do with Alshon's injury now, but you saw the Eagles offense, even without DeSean Jackson. Look, they're having trouble pushing the ball down the field with Jackson being out, with Aguilar's inconsistencies, with Arcega-Whiteside being a no-show. They're struggling in that area, but I still think they can get that together with the personnel they have right now, specifically Alshon Jeffrey. The leap they took down the stretch last year when Nick Foles took over was because, and talking about the offensive side of the football, specifically that Rams game, was because Alshon Jeffrey just started going off. And I think you're going to see he got more and more into the fold, got more and more and more involved this past game against the Jets. I think the healthier he gets, the more you see his game is going to spread out. So I'm hoping we see that a little bit more this week against Minnesota. Obviously, he has a really tough matchup, but I would like to see, again, he's been very reliable in the red zone this year on third downs. Wentz has gone to him. I want to see those two start clicking more, start at least taking some chances. Because even when Alshon Jeffrey isn't open down the field, he can still come down with the football. So I think he has been still what he's always been this year, very reliable. I just want to see that part of his game down the field come back to us, because that was a huge part of turning the season around last year.
Yeah, it's weird because like nobody really has done a lot of like testing the Vikings deep, really, even this year or even really last year. A lot of the like strategy against the Vikings have been more, you know, dink and dunk and kind of methodically move your way down the field.
Yeah.
And that's been a lot easier to stop. But it's usually really because the Vikings, after getting torched by the Rams last year on Thursday Night Football, they switched from a cover 3 base to a cover 4 base. So they stole a bunch of things from Michigan State and played like a quarters thing. And that really like strongly discourages deep passing. So I wonder if we'll see those. I think it would be really bold to take those chances, but like Doug Peterson is a pretty bold coach. So I like wouldn't be surprised. And maybe the game would hinge on a couple of like those key moments.
Well, and I wonder, too, how Minnesota's going to go about this, because the Eagles are a top 3 team in the red zone this year. Or I think they were heading into last week's game top 3 They scored two more red zone touchdowns, so I still imagine they're up there in that category. So I don't know if you want to allow the Eagles to dink and dunk drive down the field, because that's the way they've been scoring the past couple weeks. They're still one of the more efficient teams in the NFL when it comes to touchdown drives, finishing drives, and it's because their offensive line has been so good this year, and the run game has been very efficient. And in the red zone, Carson Wentz, Zach Ertz, those guys, Alshon Jeffrey, they're capitalizing. So if I'm Minnesota, I don't know. I don't know what you think. Maybe don't give them the easy gimme yards here, just because they haven't been able to push the football down the field. Maybe play a little bit up more on them and dare them to take those chances.
Yeah, so the Vikings have been really good in those situations on defense too, in the red zone and third down. I'm pretty sure the Eagles lead the league in third down efficiency too. So
they do. They're number one right now.
That's obviously going to be this huge strength on strength that'll probably have a massive effect on the game. But I don't know, like the Vikings are usually pretty content to keep things short in front of them, go up and make a tackle and make you beat them 4 yards at a time, which, you know, you can't win a game 4 yards at a time. And that's really the way that the Vikings have like continued to be a leader in defensive production allowed for like, I don't know, 5 years. So if you can get, I mean, if you think back to the time the Eagles did really torch the Vikings, it was a lot of downfield stuff, a lot of attacking cover three up the seams with Zach Ertz and stuff, and a lot of, you know, making getting Alshon Jeffrey away from Xavier Rhodes. A lot of his production came against Terrence Newman and Trey Waynes in that game. So if you wanted to like find that blueprint of the 2017 game and like recreate it, I think that you have to find a way to push it downfield. But how do you do that against cover four? Like, they just run a scheme that specifically dissuades you from doing that.
Well, exactly, and that's why Carson Wentz really even emphasized it at his press conference today. Like, you got to take what the defense is going to give you, because he was getting peppered with questions about why they haven't been able to push the ball down the field. And yeah, against it, like cover four, then if you're the Eagles and you have been as strong as you have been on third down in the red zone, to me, you should take what the defense will give you. But what they can't do, and what they did against Minnesota last year, they had success moving the football against that defense. The problem was they would get past the Vikings 40-yard line. They would get into enemy territory and they would turn the football over, or the offensive line would take a really crucial penalty that would back them up, or there would be a bad sack. And that's kind of been what's hurting this offense this year a lot, more so to me than the inability to push the ball down the field, has been, again, the mental mistakes, the penalties, and the drops. So when they get down there, they have to do what they've been doing in the red zone this year as opposed to last year, and that's finishing. So that's, to me, an emphasis this offense needs to take, because I don't think – there might be some times they have an opportunity to take a shot, but it's not going to be a consistent thing without DeSean Jackson for sure. So they got to capitalize when they get down there. Cannot turn the football over, cannot take costly penalties like they have so far the past couple weeks.
Yeah, Trey Waynes versus DeSean Jackson might be like a low-key matchup to watch, because Trey Waynes is typically the Vikings' answer to those deep burners, those deep shots. He's their speedy corner. But you mentioned the offensive line penalties and stuff. Is the offensive line struggling a bunch? Like, I just before this show looked up a bunch of pressure numbers and saw a ton of pressures coming from the interior and like Lane Johnson and stuff. Like, is the line that I typically think of the Eagles as one of the better lines in the league, but are they struggling this year?
See, for me, I've actually been really impressed with them. More so on the run game, I think they have been awesome. And they put on a clinic against the Green Bay Packers. I think the offensive line is the reason they beat Green Bay 2 weeks ago. Interior, when it comes to pass protection, they have struggled. Especially, look, when you're an undersized center like Jason Kelce, going up against the likes of who they played last week in Leonard Williams and Quinnen Williams, he's going to struggle in that area for sure. So I think, you know, when you look at a guy like Linval Joseph, how he was able to get after Carson Wentz last year, I think the offensive line has been pretty good, though, this year, to be honest. I think there's been some inconsistencies and the penalties have been frustrating. But I don't know, from a standpoint of watching them execute both on the run game and in the pass, from an eye test, and I hate to use that word, but I haven't seen the offensive line take a significant regression. Brandon Brooks, one of the top-graded guards right now in the NFL, despite coming off a torn Achilles 8 months ago. I think Isaac Seumalo has been really good at left guard. Jason Peters, you can see he's taken a little bit of a step back, but still very productive at left tackle, and he's staying on the field this year. So I don't know. I've actually been impressed with the offensive line so far.
Okay, yeah, maybe I just have an incorrect interpretation there, because I've only given it like a cursory look. But like the Vikings on defense have, as specifically Griffin and Hunter, Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter, have been like at the top of the league, both of them in pressures, and they've been both playing at an all-pro level. So I always have to ask, like, how are your tackles and how are your linebackers against tight end coverage? That's going to be like how the Vikings usually want to attack.
Getting the ball quickly is going to be huge for the Eagles offense, because Hunter and Griffin, look, they're going to get after Wentz, and Wentz has got to know, like, again, I want to encourage Wentz like to extend plays. It's what makes him great, but there's going to be times where you're not going to be able to, I think you're going to struggle to push the ball down the field this week. Take what you can get, or else Hunter and Griffin, they're going to get after you.
Yeah, and that could be real interesting. Of note, though, Linval Joseph did not practice on Wednesday. It was listed as non-injury related, which is the same mysterious listing that Stephon Diggs got last week before all of that news and rumors started swirling and stuff. Kind of sometimes they give Joseph like a veteran day and they'll call it non-injury related instead of coach's decision or something like that. But it's definitely something to monitor. But it's about time to wrap this up. So I would love to know if you have a score prediction, go for it. I don't like doing score predictions. I'll give you gambling advice instead. But hit me with whatever kind of prediction you want.
Yeah, I don't like doing score predictions either. I think it's going to be a very close game that comes down to the wire for sure. I think that both teams, I don't expect this to be a shootout by any means necessary. I think you'll see it being like a, either way, a 24-21 type of finish. I don't think this is going to be a blowout by either side. These are 2-3-2 teams that really need this win. It's a motivating game, too, because, you know, there's more so from a fan perspective, Lucas, because I think the fans, there's still a little bit of a rivalry here from that NFC Championship game with all the drama that happened during that game. So I think both teams are really going to want this win. The Eagles have such a tough stretch coming up. They got Dallas, Buffalo, Chicago, New England, and Seattle after this Vikings game. So if they could start to put together, if they win here and they can put together a 3-game win streak, that's going to be huge for their confidence. So I think it's a 1-score game that's in the low 20s at the end.
Yeah, and if it's a 1-score game, then it comes down to those red zone and those third down opportunities we talked about earlier. Yep. And that honestly, like, could just be a factor of luck. You know, whether or not you go 5-for-4 or 4-for-5, like that could end up deciding the game. The line is, I think, Vikings -3. It may have moved since last I looked, but it's somewhere in there, right? Which means that the betting market thinks that the Vikings and Eagles are two pretty even teams and they're giving 3 points to the home team. And I kind of agree with that. I think that this is a really even matchup. Both teams have pretty detrimental problems, you know, in their own worlds, but also have a ton of talent, just stacked with talent that can help overcome it and give them a shot in just about any game. So when it's even, I have kind of a general rule where I just default to the home team. So I'll say, sure, Vikings will cover, and that'll do it. But I don't say so with a ton of confidence. I really don't have a great sense for what's going to happen in this one. I think it's going to be close and weird, and it's going to come down to some singular moment that we're going to end up talking about for like 4 weeks.
Well, and at least say what you want about the Eagles defense, but one thing they've been able to do is in those situations, they've been able to stand their ground. Goal line stands. You look at against the Packers 2 weeks ago. You look at against the Atlanta Falcons in the playoffs 2 years ago, against Atlanta week one last year, against the Colts a couple weeks later. I can't tell you how many goal line stands the Eagles defense has been able to have where the offense has been able to drive down the field, but then the Eagles stand their ground. So if there's a situation like that that unfolds, I am confident the Eagles can finish the job. But at -3, yeah, man, I go back and forth with that. I don't know. I mean, the Vikings are the home team here. I like your mindset. I think the Eagles might cover that, though. If it was up to me, I might pick the Eagles to cover, but that's a close line. I see what they're thinking there.
We both made the homer pick. All is right with the world.
Yeah.
Been good doing with this with you, Louis. No offense, but I hope I don't see you in January.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. It's going to be a fun battle, and two teams that have had some pretty good matchups the past couple years, so I'm looking forward to it. Two extremely talented teams.
Absolutely. Thanks for talking.
Thanks, Lucas.